Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, happy Tuesday, everybody. I hope you're all doing well out there. Hope you've had a great week. So much going on in the world. The rain continues here in Texas. One day off would be nice. But, you know, as rescues continue, things like that, I have been contacting people from cloud seeding companies to have them on because I'd really like to address this issue. As you know, we demystify a lot of things on this show. And that's one that I really want to get into one night. Tonight we have a great roster of guests. In the second part, we will be joined by Ronald Meyer. He is the author of the new book, Jesus Had a Near-Death Experience. And we're going to be going through some of the science behind NDEs, some of the hypotheses behind them, and how NDEs and how it's a work of fiction, but how the scientific research into NDEs led to writing this book, and what some of that research is, and how that really, really speaks to non-locality. Same way as we talk regularly on this show about the remote viewing that I practice. The fact that it shows a non-localized consciousness and a connection on a level that goes beyond the world. Like, quantum physics just begins to explain it. And that's part of the thing that Ron brings up in the pre-record spot is that, you know, it's going to get to a point where all of these terminologies just break down. Much like the speed of light, like as you approach that, things just like start breaking down in physics, you know, the equation no longer equates. And it's interesting. And our guest in the first segment, I'm very, very happy to welcome tonight, Renario Ray Hernandez, folks. He is, a greater reality.com is the website. His book, one of many books, part one of six, is The Mind of God, a spiritual virtual reality model of consciousness and contact modalities. That is what we are having Ray on to discuss tonight, is the world of concept modalities. What are concept modalities, and how do they relate to the overall conversation of not just UFO, UAP, Ray, but so many other topics of the paranormal? Welcome to the show for the first time. How are you doing this evening, Ray?
Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us from Colombia tonight. You are literally coming from half a globe away. So welcome, welcome. How are things down there?
Hot. And hot. But it's very, very cheap. I was just telling you off the air that I rent a brand new four-bedroom, four-bath home in a middle-class neighborhood, very nice neighborhood, and I pay $500 a month.
Wow.
And then, obviously, the food, the taxi rides. I never spent more than $4 on a taxi ride here in my city here.
Crazy. Now, Ray, when you began your work and your PhD doctoral work on contact modalities and began the first part of The Mind of God, what was it that brought you to this research to begin with?
Well, I started off as a skeptic of all of this phenomenon. I had zero knowledge, zero interest. And then I had a paranormal experience with my ex-wife, where an energy being appeared in our living room and totally healed our paralyzed dog who we were going to be euthanizing later that afternoon.
Wow.
And that was jointly in an experience with my ex-wife and I. And then she began to pray outside to the being that healed our dog. and UFOs would show up. So then I started doing it, and UFOs would show up as well. Very large objects. And most of these were the size of a football field. They were not physical. And then I began having almost every type of paranormal experiences, out-of-body experiences, astral travel experiences, seeing shadow beings in the house, having precognition of things that are going to happen.
Yep.
I mean, tons of paranormal-related experiences.
Yeah.
And then I've had lots of synchronized orchestrated events.
Okay.
And that's the only way you could call them. And
sure.
I'll skip over a year and a half of these experiences and go straight to one day where I had driving my car in the middle of a traffic jam. I was taken out of my body into another multidimensional reality. And I was shown what is consciousness and all of the paranormal, that they're all interrelated and it's all one phenomenon. So, for example, this guest that you're going to be having in your next session, we have in our Greater Reality book series, we have authors in our various chapters that are the world's foremost authorities on near-death experiences. We have articles by Raymond Moody. We have articles by Dr. Jeffrey Long. This is Dr. Rudy Shields, professor from Harvard. Dr. Jeffrey Long has written 3 books on near-death experiences. He's been collecting data on NDEs for over 40 years. Michael Grosso is a professor of philosophy from Columbia University. And there's myself. And there's our book, volumes 1 and volumes 2. Each of them are 800 pages. As you can see, this long list of PhD academics and medical doctors.
Yeah.
And if you scroll to the top of this list, for example, a little bit more up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there, Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, was one of the co-founders of the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation, and I was one of the co-authors of that book, which I'm going to discuss in a couple of minutes. Right next to him is Dr. Bruce Grayson, and he is one of the world's leading authorities on near-death experiences. He just recently retired from the University of Virginia School of Medicine. We also have up there in that list Dr. Raymond Moody. We have Dr. Eben Alexander, a professor of neurosurgery at Harvard, who had a profound near-death experiences. And I could go on and on with this list. There's Raymond Moody at the end, all the way to the right. So our organization has the world's leading authorities on near-death experiences. And if I could argue before I begin my session here, is that the NDE is the key to understand the UFO contact phenomenon. Why? Because consciousness is fundamental. All those people in that list, you can go down that whole list, okay? All those people believe that consciousness is fundamental and that our perceived physical reality is an illusion, okay? And that's Raymond Moody thinks that same way, Dr. Jeffrey Mishloff, everyone that's on that list, okay? And that that all of the paranormal needs to be viewed as one integrated phenomenon under consciousness. And so from that basic teaching of my out-of-body experience, I was returned after about an hour. And then immediately within 2 days, I was introduced to Mary Rodwell, a UFO contact researcher in Australia, to Dr. Rudy Shields, a professor of astrophysics from Harvard University, and Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Oh, wow.
It was at the home of Dr. Edgar Mitchell on the third day where the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation research study began. And after 5 years of collecting data, because we wound up with over 15 PhD academics in that research study, after 5 years, we published an 820-page book titled Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence. 820 pages. If you go to our website, if you click on books, you'll see that is one of the books. Now, mind you, for all your audience members, that's a book of my personal experiences. But there's that's the book right there, Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence. As you can see, the co-authors on the bottom. is myself, the Harvard professor, Dr. Rudy Shields, and Dr. John Klimo, a retired professor of psychology for over 45 years and 820 pages. And that book is the world's first and only comprehensive academic statistical research study on UFO contact experiencers. And the data from that book totally contradicts what is circulating in mainstream materialist ufology. Now, that book is free. It's free. Go to that website. Yep. And you can download a PDF copy of it. Okay? So that book is free, and all the other books that are there, they're all free. Okay? See, download the book right there. Yeah. You can download and 820 pages of the world's only statistical academic research study.
That was probably my favorite. As somebody who has a knowledge vault on his website full of declassified government programs, things like that, that was probably my favorite thing about your website whenever you sent it to me, Ray, whenever we first started talking.
Yeah, it's all free. And what it is that here I'm going to these UFO conferences. I've asked to speak at maybe 5 or 6 of them in the last 8 years. That's it. Okay. Mm. And yet we have the only academic statistical research study on UFO contact experiences that totally contradicts, you know, the field of materialist ufology. Why? I've never been invited to almost all of the major conferences. The reason is because what we found totally contradicts what is circulating in ufology. What we found out was that the phenomenon, yes, there are physical components to it, but the overwhelming majority of the components of the phenomenon are non-physical. They're paranormal in nature. For example, 50% of the people that took our survey had a miraculous medical healing, just like our dog. Okay? 50% of these people, we're talking now 4,250 people. Okay? This is not chump change. 4,250 people from over 125 countries. Okay? And so that's a hell of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And these are PhD academics that were administrating this. And then seeing, for example, having out-of-body experiences, it was close to 60% of these people were having out-of-body experiences. Seeing a ghost, it was like 80% of them saw a ghost. Okay? Yep. And being brought to a multi-dimensional reality, like I was 50% of the people. Okay? Having seen a dead person. Okay? Huge numbers.
Yeah.
And the reason for all of this is because if you talk to major contact experiencers like myself, they will tell you that they've not only seen a UFO, they've had out-of-body experiences, they've had multi-astral travel experiences, okay? They've seen dead people, they've seen shadow being. There was a period I was seeing shadow being, you know, several times a week, streaking, you know, right across me in the back when I was doing Zoom calls. So and also how these people changed. Oh my goodness. People that were atheists all have become deeply spiritual. Okay. People that feared death, they no longer fear death. People that were horrible ogres, all of a sudden a loving light, and you know, very loving.
Yeah.
And illustrations of this are two well-known people. Okay. One is Whitley Strieber. Whitley Strieber started off with all the horrors of the alien abduction phenomena. Now, he prays to the beings that interacted with him. He considers them angels. Okay? That's Whitley Strieber. His last book, last three books have been about God and the afterlife. Kathleen Martin, I'm sure you know her name.
We are very good friends with Kathleen Martin.
Kathleen Martin, right? For her first book was Capture, you know, this evil captured alien abduction type of book, right? Her last book was From Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are just two examples that people know about. But we literally have 4,350 people.
Oh, absolutely.
That went through that transition. And so I also have articles in there of what we learned about the UFO contact phenomenon. We have a summary of that book, Beyond UFOs. If you don't want to read 820 pages, we have a summary of the data. And a very, very detailed summary. And so naturally, I was never invited to any of these UFO conferences. All of these articles here are from volumes 1 and 2 of our Greater Reality book series. Now, these are all theoretical articles, volumes 1 and 2, and each volume is 800 pages. Now, this book, The Mind of God, that's the introduction to our 6-volume book series. Volumes 1 and 2 are theoretical in nature, and you'll see all those academics that you saw those pictures of, yeah, they wrote articles for volumes 1 and 2. Now, volumes 3, 4, 5, and 6 are articles written by major experiencers of the contact modalities. They're not listed there. They're listed in the book section. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Where it says all the way at the top,
yeah,
where it says books and articles. That's a book about my personal experiences. Mm-hmm. This is the Beyond UFOs. That's the introduction to the Greater Reality book series. And here's volumes 1 and 2. This book is 800 pages, and volume 2, which follows it afterwards, is also 800 pages. These are theoretical. And then if you could scroll down, these are now experiencer-written chapters. These books are also 800 pages. And if you go to the table of contents, a little bit more at the bottom, yep, right there, go there, table of contents, okay? You will see a very brief summary of some of these people. Go down a little bit more. Okay, right there, Dr. Melinda Greer. Go a little bit right there, okay? Yep. She's a recently retired medical doctor. She has seen 14 UFOs. She's seen 3 Sasquatch experiences, 2 of them very up close, one of them lasting the entire night. She has had 2 near-death experiences. Her second NDE was just totally unbelievable, extremely powerful. She's had out-of-body experiences. She's been brought to other dimensions. She's seen deceased people and a whole boatload of paranormal experiences. So this is a recently retired medical doctor who's been quiet all of her life. And this article is the first attempt for her to come out of the closet. The second person under there is also a retired medical doctor, Dr. Joseph Brooks. He's been doing CE5 since 1992. And he's seen a whole boatload of UFOs. One of them, we discussed, we compared notes, because I told him these were holographic projections. And he told me of an experience where he saw a World War I wooden airplane, but it didn't have the 3 layers of wings. It only had 1 wing, and it was bitty, witty wings, little tiny wings, not even, 5 feet across. And he looked up, and it didn't have a pilot, and it was running parallel to him on the highway at like 60 miles an hour.
Wow.
And so he concluded that this is impossible. A World War I airplane painted in bright fire engine red with no pilot, with little bitty wings. You couldn't hear any noise, no noise at all. He said, this was not real. This had to be a holographic projection. And I told him that's the exact conclusion that I reached based upon many of my experiences. One of my experiences, I will go back to my very first UFO that I called down. And that was a very, very detailed experience. Lots of stuff happened in that experience. But basically, my friends came and they began to try to explain away of what they were seeing. These were hundreds of oblong streaks of light that formed like a whole huge skeleton. It was like 6 football fields in length, a football field in height. It was enormous, this thing, right on top of us. And so then they began to try to explain it away. And after 2 minutes, I busted out laughing. And I told the intelligence behind the UFO, because I called it down. In 15 minutes, it appeared after I called it down. So in my mind, I said, and this is verbatim, I said, you better come up with some better bullshit than this, because my friends don't believe you. Instantaneously, what we were watching totally disappeared, and now replaced by like 50 huge orbs the size of Volkswagen Beetles, very, very close to the ground, okay? And they were all going on and off, the orbs, on and off, like behind the bicycle, you see those bicycles that go on and off like that?
Yeah.
Except these are huge orbs, okay? So then my friends immediately stopped trying to explain it away, because this was, you can't explain that away. And it was a totally different object from what I first said. Mm. And so Joseph Brooks, Dr. Joseph Brooks, and I were comparing notes. And we both came up with the hypothesis that these were holographic projections that people were seeing. Okay? Now, same thing with the beings that people are seeing. Overwhelming majority of people that see these beings, and there are literally tens of thousands of different types of beings. There's a friend of mine in Miami. My Alzheimer's is kicking in. He's written 16 books. Each book has like 300 pages of different UFO contact experiencer stories with different types of beings. And they're all different, you know, from robots to elephant heads to like bunny rabbits to fish heads to all the typical UFO beings that people associate with. And that's what in our survey, we literally had, and for our book, Beyond UFOs, we literally had tens of thousands of different responses of beings that people were seeing. Okay? So my question now, I'm posing to you, okay? Are these tens of thousands of different physical beings that appear in almost all of the cases for less than a minute, okay? People are out there having a beer with one of these beings for 3 hours, you know, shooting the breeze. You know, it's like, you see them, they last less than a minute, boom, they're gone. Okay? Now, are these beings, tens of thousands of different beings coming from tens of thousands of different planets? Or is this something a little bit more complicated? Now, Jacques Vallée said that these were multidimensional experiences.
Sure.
Okay? Alan Hynek said the same thing before he died. Dr. John Mack.
Yep.
Okay, a professor of psychiatry from Harvard University, in his book Passport to the Cosmos, he said these are multidimensional experiences that these people are having. They're being brought to other dimensions. They're seeing a diverse array of different types of beings.
Sure.
Again, for less than a minute. Okay? So if these three brilliant minds in the field of ufology are saying that these experiences are multidimensional, that they involve, quote-unquote, what Jacques Vallée said, a manipulation of space-time. Okay? The conclusion that we reached in our book, Beyond UFOs, was that the UFO phenomenon is a multidimensional experience involving a manipulation of space-time.
Sure.
Now, let me ask you another question. Near-death experiences, is there a manipulation of space-time? Obviously. Without a body experiences, is there a manipulation of space-time?
Sure.
With astral travel experiences, is there manipulation of space-time? If are you seeing your Aunt Matilda 1 week after she died? She's in your living room. Is that a manipulation of space-time? Okay.
Well,
ayahuasca. Okay. You.
All of that presumes that time actively exists, Ray. Time is literally the only part of physics that's made up. So it's agreed upon what it is,
yes.
But you take that same time, you put it on Jupiter and it does not apply because it's relative to the observer, which is relative to gravity, relative to all kinds of things. So, yeah, the idea
that's the key that holds
the conclusion
that all of the contact modalities and what I mentioned to you were just some of the contact modalities.
Sure.
Contact modalities are paranormal experiences involving a manipulation of space-time. All of them. It's all one phenomenon. And so the key to be able to begin to understand that is the concept of a manipulation of space-time, where your consciousness is being brought to another dimension. Okay? That's what ayahuasca does to you as well.
Sure, sure. And you know... With all of that, the one thing that we talk about regularly on the show when it comes to space-time, anything like that, especially when it comes to paranormal, is the fact that frequencies, things change when you're around certain types of technology. If you're around something that would warp space-time, if you're inside of an alien craft that is able to warp space-time or vibrationally shift between realities or dimensions, you would be vibrated at the same rate as that craft. You would be vibrated at the same rate as that technology in order to make that happen. There are some things that happen in this universe. A magnet and a needle are a prime example. You can use a magnet to find a needle, and it'll move the needle. The thing is, if you leave the magnet near the needle too long, now the needle's a magnet.
Let me give you a tool that you and your audience can utilize, okay? In volume one of our Greater Reality book series, we have a whole section on non-local consciousness.
Sure.
And the quantum hologram, okay? So that's basically, it's based upon Dr. Edgar Mitchell's quantum holography theory of consciousness, which is very intricate, very detailed. And we have his magnum opus article in that book. And that book was published in the Harvard Journal of Astrophysics, which is the journal of Dr. Rudy Shields. So it's very dense to be able to understand it. But we have about five additional articles that break down that concept of the quantum hologram and non-local consciousness. And that is the vehicle of how humans are able to tap into these information fields, because our reality is based upon information fields. And these series of five articles, they're written in simple language. They're not written, you know, with scientific language and computer codes and quantum physics and things like that. No, these books are meant for the layperson. But they begin to explain the science behind non-local consciousness and how we are able to tap in to information from other realities. Like, for example, precognition, for example. Sure. You know, how that works,
et cetera. Remote viewing, everything else. I'm a remote
viewer. Remote viewing, correct.
We talk about that regularly. We'll be at the remote viewing conference this year with Irva.
We have a chapter written by Stephen A. Schwartz.
Yep.
He's one of the main pioneers of remote viewing. He was doing remote viewing before the Stanford Research Center. Okay? His name is Stephen A. Schwartz. He's a brilliant man. Brilliant. And we have an article that he wrote about the whole early history of remote viewing and what it is. And he ties in the whole aspect, the theoretical aspect of non-local consciousness how that works.
Absolutely. Just the idea, and it's something that we bring up regularly, just ninth grade science teaches us that we are 90% empty space. You and I are sharing an electron shell right now by all means of science. You know, so to think that this isn't an agreed upon illusion, to think that the reality around us isn't even manipulatable by our own consciousness is that was really the basis of the paper that Hal Puthoff wrote years ago that began the work at SRI was, you know, the idea of when scientists go home, are they adversely affecting their experiment by thinking about it? You know, the whole concept of if you think your iron is on while you're driving to work and you think it long enough and hard enough, will your apartment burn down? You know, because you've kind of put it out there.
I would argue that the pioneers behind non-locality were Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Hal Puthoff, Russell Targ.
Yeah.
Stephen A. Schwartz, and also Dr. Dean Radin
at
the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Absolutely.
And we have articles in our book, volumes one and volumes two, from all of these people.
Yeah.
So, and this is free, folks. This is free. And it's not some bullshit conspiracy theory or disclosure type of bullshit. You know, this is real science.
The thing that we bring up, especially about Hal Puthoff, who's literally in our backyard working on how to squeeze a vacuum and get energy out of it here in Austin, Texas, in his lab. The thing about why laser scientists like him are involved is because you literally have to know how to take a material, be it a chemical dye, an atom of something, a wafer of semiconductor, a ruby rod, and vibrate it and the atoms in it to such a point that when photons pass through, they come out different. You know? So you understand vibrational science and the realms in between atoms in a totally different way than the average person or the average scientist.
I would highly recommend folks to read the articles that we have in A Greater Reality Volumes 1. They're free. And they talk about the science behind non-locality And if you go to the table of contents, for example.
Yep.
Okay.
But
okay, if we go up a little bit, we have a whole section on the sign of the primacy of consciousness. That means that consciousness is fundamental and not our physical reality. Yeah. And Michael Grosso was the PhD professor of philosophy that we have as one of the co-editors of our book. Larry Dossey is a medical doctor. Dr. Bruce Grayson was at the University of Virginia. He's one of the leading academics on NDEs. And there we have Peter Sturrock, was a professor of physics at Stanford University.
Yeah.
And all the other articles are people like that. And the next section is on non-locality. The first one is the primacy of consciousness, all those articles. Then non-locality. This is what I'm talking about. Edgar Mitchell, The Quantum Hologram and the Nature of Consciousness. Glenn Ryan breaks down Edgar's article.
Yeah.
And he discusses his interaction with non-human intelligence. Rudy Shields talks about the connection between consciousness, our brain, the soul, and God, which is information-based. Giorgio Piacenza has a very similar article, but applies it to the UFO contact phenomenon. So it's all science-based articles on non-locality. And it's free, folks. It's free.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay?
It's great.
It's not conspiracy theory bullshit, you know?
It is.
Roswell
it is,
crash for like the 500th time. Okay?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we actively attended and sponsored the International Association of Near-Death Studies conference with the Bigelow Institute all of a few years ago in Salt Lake City. And that is one of the examples that I give regularly of a group of people. And this is that magnetic example that I'm talking about, where once you're exposed to that frequency, other things of that frequency tend to happen to you. Paranormal things start happening. Bigfoot things start happening. It's fascinating to see. And a lot of Kathleen Martin's work went into the other phenomenon attached to the experiencer of UFO phenomena. And it really is interesting.
And that is what our book Beyond UFOs is all about.
I will say this, walking into the room, and I'm pretty emotive. I'm pretty connected to my emotions. Jeffrey Mishlove was there. I'd met him at the IRVA conference a couple months before. When I walked in that room, Ray, it was like I was kicked in the gut with energy from all of these people who had survived near-death experience. The vibrational rate in that room was off the charts, off the chart, like to the point where I was physically ill for a day. It was wild. One of the only two, and I've been to psychic conventions. I've been to all kinds of stuff, man. Like I've been to summonings, all kinds of things in my life. Never have I experienced, I've had religious experiences, nothing like that, where it was like open the doors and it was like a kick to the gut. That shift in energy and consciousness was just on a different level, Ray.
I started off our conversation saying that the NDE phenomenon is the clue to be able to understand the UFO contact phenomenon.
Yeah.
Why? Because these individuals were brought to meet the mind of God.
Into a point of non-local consciousness.
Yes, yes. And so once you've had that experience, you immediately know. Okay, if you go scroll down a little bit, down a little bit, out-of-body experiences, lucid dreams.
Yep.
And remote viewing is there as well, Stephanie Schwartz. So, and then volumes two goes into near death experiences, the survival of consciousness. and so the NDE phenomenon directly kicks your ass and tells you that our physical reality is an illusion. Because everyone that's had a near death experience will tell you that that reality over there is much more real than this physical reality that we're living in.
Yeah.
See, volumes two starts off with near-death experiences. You can stop these people right there. Sharon Hewitt Rawlett was one of the runner-up prize winners, okay, to a Bigelow's contest.
Yep.
Dr. Bruce Grayson was one of the two or three pioneers that started the NDE movement. Jeffrey Long as well, one of the top three or four NDE researchers in the world. He's a co-editor of our book. Raul Valverde crunched out the data from Jeffrey Long's 30-year statistical database on NDE experiences. And Raymond Moody was the founder of the near-death experience movement. So we really got, you know, the top folks.
Yeah.
But getting back to what I said was that once you've been in that other reality, you understand that this reality, a physical reality, is an illusion.
Yeah.
Okay. And that over there, universally, people say that that was more real than this here. Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, the NDE is just unbelievably complicated. I won't go into it as well. But with the NDE phenomenon, for example, a guest that you need to bring on is Yossi Ronen, R-O-N-E-N. Yossi is Y-O-S-S-I.
Yep.
Okay. He had wrote a book titled One. And in volume three of my book, he wrote a 40-page chapter of his experiences. And let me just tell you very, very briefly. Yossi went to work. He was doing construction work. Scroll down a little bit. Scroll down. Is that, that's
about
the table of contents.
About Yossi, go ahead.
Yeah, go to the table of contents.
Yeah.
Go down a little bit.
For the listeners out there, we're actively scrolling through the table of contents of the book right now, trying to find reference to Yossi.
I think you pulled up volume four. But don't worry about it. I'll tell your listeners. He's in volume three. But basically, Yossi went to work doing construction work. He came home dead tired. He went to bed and he went to sleep. So it was like, 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And then he had an out-of-body experience, his first ever out-of-body experience. So he sees his body underneath sleeping. He was like, oh, my God, my dad, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden, all around him were these short gray aliens. Okay, the typical short gray aliens. And they were laughing with him. They were smiling. He was interacting with them. He was having a good ass time with these little gray beings out of body. Okay, then all of a sudden, he goes back into his body. And then he hears noise in his room. And he thought that a burglar, someone had entered his room. So he starts looking around. And it was these five gray aliens. Okay, he described them as 3 feet tall, like the typical grays. And then he freaks out, okay? He freaks out. He got petrified. He was shivering. He couldn't even talk. He couldn't even move. And then one of the beings came up to him and got close to him, and he became more settled. And then they communicated with him telepathically to relax, that they're not going to do him any harm. And then all of a sudden, they put into his mind tons of love, okay? So with NDE, people get the feeling of tons of love that almost everybody has an NDE. People communicate with a non-human intelligence mind to mind. Okay. Now, these gray beings did something that I've never heard anyone else having. They allowed Yossi to enter their mind, their consciousness, their thoughts. And what he realized that these five beings were actually one being. Okay. They were one mind.
Yep.
And then he found out that their knowledge was like unbelievable. It's like the mind of God, that universal knowledge. Okay. And very, very deeply spiritual, very loving, very caring. And he describes it in his book and in the article, which is in volume three. So get a free copy of it, folks. Take advantage before the free offer goes away. volume three is his article. And then it got to the point where he was like having so much download. These are downloads of information from this one being that presented himself, physical body. He asked them, what planet are you from? And they said, we're not from what you think of as a planet. Basically saying we're from another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then they said other questions like, are you God? They said, no, we're not God, but we know of God. Okay. The big universal mind.
Sure.
And then it was like unbelievable information he was getting. Then all of a sudden, they said that they cut him off from that access of that information. Remember Dr. Spock had that Vulcan mind melt where he would get all the information from someone else? The same thing happened to Yosin. So they cut him off from that because they said it was going to do him damage. It's going to do him harm in the future. It's just too much information. Difficult for him to accept it. So it'd be great if you could get him on your show because it shows, first of all, that the Greys are multidimensional beings, that the Greys are not here to do us any harm, okay? That they're actually deeply spiritual. They're here to help us. And that their appearance is not physical. They appear to us like a holographic projection as very physical. But in reality, they told the OC, he said, is that how you really look at, you know, from where you're from, the way you appear as a short gray? They said, no, we could actually appear any way we want to, physical.
Sure.
But this is the way that we're appearing to you, okay? And he said about other beings as well. He said the same thing with other beings that are multidimensional beings. And so everything that we've hypothesized, that I've hypothesized here in all of my books, Yossi is a clear representative of that. But nobody from the UFO conference is going to be inviting Yossi to speak because it has nothing to do with materialist stuff. The only thing that you have about, you know, short grays is the hypnotic regression bullshit from David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins. And they pre-selected the people, okay? At most, each of them worked with at most 100 people over 30, 40 years. And these were pre-selected people. And if anyone had a positive experience or a neutral experience, they didn't want to talk to them. And it was based upon hypnotic regression. And we have an article in Volume 3 of a Greater Reality book series by the ex-wife of Bud Hopkins, who presented tons of case studies of leading questions from these two people. They were very, very close friends. Like, for example, David Jacobs had a woman who had a reptilian experience. And before her interview, you were saying, oh, last week I had someone that I interviewed that had a reptilian experience. The reptilian raped her, okay? Totally abused her. This is before he's going to be interviewing this woman under hypnotic regression. So what the hell you think is this woman's going to come out with? You know? I was asking one leading questions after another. And she had the actual tapes, the tapes, okay? So, but yet that's what ufology perceives to be legitimate UFO contact, you know, beings research, which is bullshit, you know? So that's what you get in the field of materialist ufology, a lot of distortion.
Well, and, you know, especially when it comes to experience to begin with, it's one of those you have to believe the experiencer until proven otherwise, because otherwise you are literally throwing baby out with the bathwater at that point. So.
Well, that's what ufology has done historically with all the major UFO organizations. OK, for example, Raymond Fowler wrote a chapter for Volume 5. Raymond Fowler has written, goodness, over 15 books on UFOs. And the last, you know, 10 of them have been about contact experiences.
Sure.
Okay. And he started in the early 1960s writing about this. He's now in his early 90s. And he told me that for the first 35 years, they would throw out all the cases that involved the paranormal. Yes, they saw a UFO. Then they started having paranormal experiences. Throw it out. Okay.
Absolutely.
Same thing with beings.
Yeah.
Anything that had a being in their story, they would throw it out.
Yeah.
Same thing with Alan Hynek said the same thing.
Yeah.
And so for many, many, many years, these things weren't even discussed.
Absolutely. Okay? And they're barely discussed now. And that's something
Correct.
That we talk about on the show regularly is the idea that science is rapidly catching up to paranormal since the last few years when quantum entanglement won the Nobel Peace Prize. The conversation has changed, and even I'm one of the folk that is in the camp of I am a fan of the relabeling of UFO to UAP because it brings science into the conversation, kicking and screaming. UFO doesn't, but phenomenon does.
I changed it to a new name.
What's that?
CAP. Consciousness Aerial Phenomenon.
Okay.
Because that more appropriately coins it what it is. This is a consciousness-based phenomenon. Because these experiences manipulate space-time, and what we're seeing, based upon a lot of data from our research study, that these are holographic projections. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you physically see a being.
Sure.
Yes. But when your Aunt Matilda dies, you bury her a week ago, and all of a sudden she appears in your living room. Is your Aunt Matilda real or not real? Is she dead or not dead? Okay?
Sure.
The question is, she's both. Is he physical or not physical? She's both. Because these are multidimensional experiences.
Sure, but we do have, and granted, those multidimensional experiences are real, not imaginary. So,
Correct.
And that's how physical evidence, trace evidence, things like that ends up being a part of the equation, folks.
Correct. There's a theory in philosophy with Dr. You ever heard of Dr. Jeff Kripal?
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, he's a professor at Rice University.
Yep.
A professor of religion and philosophy.
Yeah.
And he has now for 3 years sponsored a conference on the paranormal, basically.
Archives of the Impossible.
Archives of the Impossible. That's the one, correct. So he invited me down there. This was 2 years ago. And he and I think exactly the same way. And he wrote the foreword to our 6-volume books. The foreword to it. And he has a theory, which is a philosophical theory to explain the physical and non-physical. It's called dual aspect monism. Dual aspect monism. And he's an idealist like I am, that consciousness is fundamental. Just like all the major NDE researchers, we all hypothesize that. Same with Stephanie Schwartz, the remote viewer, Jeffrey Mishloff. All of us believe that consciousness is fundamental. And by the way, Jeffrey Mishloff wrote 2 articles for our Greater Reality book series. They're in one in volume one, volume two. And so the dual aspect monism theory, just very, very briefly, very simplistically,
please,
is that when we get reincarnated into this physical reality, all of our memories of the universal mind, you know, when we're connected with God, okay, that gets wiped away. But we're still connected with the mind of God. We're still connected with that information. With as we talked about, through non-local consciousness, we have access to a lot of information because it's like an Akashic record. That's sure. what we're downloading to. So once we die, then we get reconnected back to the mind of God. So it's this dual aspect that we're always part of the mind of God, always connected. And that's from a consciousness's primary component of it. Okay. But while we're here in this temporary physical reality, we're like blinded. We can't see. So it's this dual aspect of reality. That's a very, very simplistic concept of it.
Sure. And you know, one of the things that we've been talking about with a researcher and that I've been bringing up since is the concept of like night myopia. It's a prime example of while you are hyper focusing on something, that something actively disappears. You know, like you can take a pencil and put it on the wall and like tape it to the wall and literally focus on that pencil long enough that the pencil will dissipate and vanish and you'll only see the wall. Then as soon as you blink or shift your focus, the pencil comes back. And that whole concept of what do we do when that happens and when those things happen, even the idea of non-local consciousness, When I speak about binaural beats on shows, one of the things I talk about is the idea that we go through a good 70% of our day in a state of rote hypnosis, right? We don't think about getting up or being upright or walking or breathing or anything like that. If you are sitting at your computer and doing your TPS reports the same that you do every day, you may be taking in new data, but your fingers are and your brain are going through a rote state of what to do. You know, they don't have to think about that. The process that I follow after this show to make a post on my website is a flow process. I don't have to think about it anymore. You know, when you're driving to work every day and you go, oh, wow, I'm already at this exit. You are in a state that's a different state of reality at that point, and different things are an option. You know, daydreaming starts happening, all kinds of stuff. It's pretty fascinating what your mind will do to A, occupy itself, and where it will go and actively take you, much like any lucid dream or programmed dream or dreaming with intent, you know?
If I could make a comment on what you just stated.
Please.
A lot of people that are astral travel experiences.
Yeah.
Many of them are yogis and people from the Indian tradition. Evan Alexander started doing it, and all of a sudden he's popping out of his body and going into other dimensions, other realities,
sure,
and getting information downloads.
Yep.
Okay. Similar to what you just mentioned. You're tapping outside of the physical reality.
Yeah.
And you're getting information via non-local consciousness of these multi-dimensional realities and databases. And so I've heard tons of stories of astral travel experiences via meditation.
Absolutely.
And so regarding the binary beats, one of the co-founders of binary beats, together with the guy who invented the term out-of-body experiences, Robert Monroe, okay?
Yeah.
Dr. Tom Campbell, he wrote an article, which is in our book, about out-of-body experiences. I consider him the world's number one OBE experiencer by far,
and theoretician.
And hopefully you can get him on your show.
Well, and even the fact of now, like I make a lot of electronic circuits. I do a lot of things like that. And just the idea of even the God helmet and other technologies that actively mimic exactly what an OBE is, you know, and people come back.
You would have a wonderful conversation with Tom Campbell.
It's
he also thinks like we all do.
Yeah,
that consciousness is primary.
Our brain is a transceiver, man. We are constantly sending and receiving data. The only difference is that our subconscious is the thing processing it, not our conscious mind, 90% of the time. So we are connected to these things. It's whether or not we give them the light of day in our mind. You know, no different than all the things that you rotely go through and do, you're going to process in dreams later. You know, because you just karate reflex handled that with your body. You didn't think about it. You didn't emotionally process it, things like that. So, it's a funny mishmash of reality, non-reality mixed with non-local reality and reality that we utterly make, Ray. Even the idea, and we talk about this all the time with paranormal investigation, the idea of, and we've got you for about five more minutes, but the idea that, when you're going out on a paranormal investigation or a Sasquatch hunt, you should have a rote list of things to check off. You shouldn't be looking at movies about that location or reading stories, things like that, because A, you're kind of polishing the filter that you're looking at your data through. But B, you're also in your mind charging that location, you know? So you could actively be manifesting the phenomena that you're trying to catch in the wild. Well, like it could utterly be a manifestation of you and your intent when you arrive.
Just think of CE5.
Yeah.
I've called down many, many UFOs with witnesses. Okay.
Yep.
The last time I stopped doing it because it's just, to me, it's not that stimulating. But the last time was with a an attorney who was a Princeton graduate, Mike Merberg. And I detailed that experience in my book, A Greater Reality, One Man's Journey of Experience. And so just think of CE5. Here is Ray Hernandez outside of his house or at the, in Mike's case, he has a huge land. And here I am calling a UFO. And 15 minutes, this huge object appears. And in Mike's case, what appeared was this huge metal cylinder.
Oh, wow.
Very close to us. It's in my book. It's free.
Incredible.
And downloaded. And it has hundreds of my other experiences. And not just the UFO stuff, but, you know, the other paranormal experiences. And so imagine that.
Yeah.
Here you are, a human being, talking to this non-human intelligence. I want to see you again. I want to see you again.
Yeah.
And within 15 minutes, usually it's non-physical objects appear to me, but they're huge. They're like the size of a football field.
Yeah.
And a conglomeration of lights, light patterns.
Interesting.
Very close to the ground. We're not talking about stars. We're talking like right on top of your damn house, okay?
Yeah.
Now imagine that, okay? Within 15 minutes, this thing appears, okay? It's all dealing with not your brain, but with non-local consciousness, your spirit, interacting with the Akashic fields, which are then tapping into, okay, to the fields associated with UFO intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely mind-blowing. But yet you think ufology talks about CE5?
Well, and, you know, we talk about it regularly on the show. I am a...
That's your show, to your credit. But we're talking about a UFO conference.
The
International Association of UFOs, whatever that major conference is called. Do you think they talk about that? No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating to me, once again, the different modalities, the different way and how these things are related, once again, because we hold on this show that they are all fully related, 100% related.
We only got a few minutes, I guess, on the show. I just want to get folks to understand that what I'm offering is free information. I'm not charging a penny for these things.
That's right.
These are academic work. And it's all about the paranormal, about UFOs, NDEs, out-of-body experiences, okay, astral travel experiences. And all the information in here is written by academics. And we all argue that it's all one phenomenon based on the consciousness. For the UFOs, for example, UFO section, that's in volume 2. We have 13 articles on UFOs, arguing that UFO is a consciousness-based phenomenon. Guess what? They're all written by PhD academics. Okay? So please take advantage of the information that I'm offering to you. It's all free. And that book that you have right there, Beyond UFOs, that's the world's first and only comprehensive academic statistical research study on UFO contact experiencers. And almost all of our data contradicts what is circulating in mainstream materialist ufology. So this is not woo-woo science.
Yeah.
This is hardcore science written by real freaking PhD academics.
Ray, okay? I want to thank you for your candid words tonight, for your candor, as well as your incredible body of research with this amazing ream of Dream Team researchers. It's absolutely incredible.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for your time tonight. Thank you so much for everything that you were doing in
You're
researching
very welcome.
These contacts.
And say hello to your next guest. Tell them I also am an NDE researcher and NDE publisher with all my colleagues.
Absolutely.
It's all interrelated, UFOs and NDEs.
Absolutely. Thank you so much once again for your time, Ray. We will be sharing links to the show with you. Everything else. You have a great night. Thank you so much for everything. Take care. Have a great night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Man, what an incredible conversation with Ray, folks. While you are online checking out and getting your copy of Beyond UFOs by Ray Hernandez, make sure to over at agreaterreality.com. Make sure to stop on by Curious Research, curiousresearch.com or .org. curiousresearch.org is where you can get only your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log, but also the all-new, the all-new Remote Viewing Session Journal. If you're a remote viewer, stop on by and get your copy of the Remote Viewing Session Journal. It's a great way to keep all of your sessions in one place, be able to call the data, put it all together, database things, and have it in one bound collection. So stop on by, check that out, everybody. When we come back from this quick break, we will be joined by Ronald Meyer. We will be talking about his brand new book, Jesus Had a Near-Death Experience. We will be talking about that and so much more right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the Field Observation and Encounter Log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much for staying tuned. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. If you are a user of CBD products like I am for anxiety, travel anxiety, other health reasons, stop on by and check out all of the great products from Christopher Lynch and True Hemp Science. TrueHempScience.com provides some amazing CBD products made through a spigeric process. They use every part of the plant. Stems, seeds, roots, leaves, buds, every part of the plant is used, reused, combusted, and reused to create an amazing full-spectrum CBD product that is complete with terpene profiles and all. Stop on by and check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more while you're there. While you are online checking out of everything from True Hemp Science, stop on by and check out some of the stuff from our guest in this segment, Ron Meyer. He is the producer of the amazing film, The Mysteries of Bradshaw Ranch, as well as the awesome new book with co-author Mark Reeder, Jesus Had a Near-Death Experience. Now, Ronald is the science part of this. Mark is the history part, but I wanted to have Ronald on to talk about some of the science that inspired this amazing work of fiction, because the idea that Jesus had a near-death experience, I would almost have to say, like, yes and absolutely, Ron, even if you're talking the concept of did Jesus completely die and come back? So welcome to the show, Ron. How are you doing this evening?
Great to be here. I'm happy here in Colorado. It's that tricky western weather type weather right now, and who knows what we'll get. Maybe we'll get a thunderstorm to accent my thoughts.
Right. Well, how long have you been studying the paranormal, things like that? Because once again, you are the founder of Sitter Communications. You have had some great success with some of your Bigfoot film in the past, as well as Mysteries of Bradshaw Ranch, which is available on all kinds of platforms right now. How did you first come to the world of paranormal and extreme science investigation and research, Ron?
So pre-COVID, you know, that's kind of the way a lot of people define things right now, is that I was hired by one of the companies I produce series for to do something on Bigfoot. My daughter actually was more interested in it than me. So I said, okay, let's go ahead and do it. And it became known as Chasing Bigfoot. It's available on all the streaming platforms. But in the process of doing that series, I encountered a lot of people that told their stories of encounter with something called Bigfoot. And it was clear to me that they were being truthful about their experience. They weren't lying.
Mm.
They weren't making it up. Sometimes you could see that they went back. It had such a profound sense, feeling for them that, you know, moved them back to a state that was sometimes exciting, sometimes terrifying.
Absolutely.
Depending upon what your framework was at the time, but it was usually life transforming in some way. So, but one of the last people I talked to said, well, I'm not in the school. I'm a minority right now. And that is, I think Bigfoot is something paraphysical, just to be simple, that it's, and I had sort of agreed that this could be some sort of a biological form, either connected to large apes or some version of us that's roaming around. Just didn't make sense to me. I have a strong background in biology and ecology, and it just didn't seem possible to me.
Mm.
This idea of something paraphysical kind of fascinated with me. And as a filmmaker, sometimes my way of learning things is to do a movie about it. So I decided to do a movie that became the Bigfoot Alien Connection Revealed. And it was really transformational for a lot of people. It's right now on YouTube. It's got like 4.7 million views. And it's similar. Ah, there it is. It validated for people, many people, something that happened to them that they were unwilling to talk about, usually either some kind of UFO phenomena or Bigfoot encounter. And the fact that I was bringing them under one umbrella seemed to be strangely reassuring to them. And it, you know, just became this huge success. And those are the two things that took me on the further investigations that I've done subsequently.
You know, the fact that you got into all of this through Bigfoot is fascinating to me, because there are so many other angles, of course, paranormal, haunting TV, things like that have been hugely popular in the content market, and especially UFO UAPs over the last many years. But the fact that you came to this world of research and filmmaking through documentary Bigfoot work is fascinating to me, because it really is one of those. Well, one of the mottos of this show is that we will believe the experiencer until proven otherwise, Ron. And even with Curious Research, when I founded that, the idea that even if data or images are examined and something else comes of your experience, that does not mean that your experience has been removed. You know, it doesn't change that moment in time that changed who you are and how you view the world and universe around you and your place in it.
Yeah, I ran into that phenomenon quite frequently, and I actually had my own Bigfoot encounters, oddly.
Really?
Yes, it was. I don't know. Do you want me to talk about that?
Please, please go ahead. This is all back material.
Okay, so there's this place called Bailey, Colorado. It's a small mountain town, and in fact, the person that told me that Bigfoot was probably something paraphysical has a Sasquatch outpost there, And oh, by the way, interestingly, my son-in-law was putting on a Bigfoot family weekend in Ohio, and my daughter was part of the film team that went there to film that, and as a result, they eventually got married, and now that Bigfoot weekend is held here, and it's held at this wonderful resort, old-time resort that's been renovated in Bailey, Colorado.
Oh, wow.
And in the process of doing another series called The Paranormal Highway, we had experiences with people touching trees, you know, kind of embracing them and getting some sort of contact, feedback sort of thing through the tree, you know. Some were quite profound. So
interesting.
The Bigfoot weekend was going on, and I was asked to come up and do a meditation with the group. And before the evening night ops for the people occurred, I was looking around and talking to the person who was running the little gift shop, and she said, "Oh, would you like to hear about an alien abduction I had when I was a kid?" And I said, "Well, sure." And so I listen. This is what I do. I listen to people, yeah, kind of validate their story. She says, "I got something interesting I want to show you." So she took me outside on the grounds and took me to this tree, which you could call it a prayer tree or a sacred tree.
Okay.
It's a place where the Ute Indians, by the way, the same Indians that surround Skinwalker Ranch, Native Americans, would come to this tree and take out little pieces of bark. And you can see where that was. And when they were young trees, they shaped them like bonsais. And it was confirmed by a Ute shaman that this was one of those trees. And I found that quite fascinating. So when I did the meditation for the group of about 40 people, I said, "Well, you guys want to try something? Like, there's this tree over here. And if you go over there in small groups of 3 and 4, lean up against it, close your eyes, and you know, see what happens." And pretty much everybody had some sort of interesting experience, including a young teenager who said she traveled in the astral plane. I said, "Would you want to do that again?" She said, "No way, I never want to do that again." But when everybody had moved away, Alan, my son-in-law at that time, we decided to try it ourselves. And I had my hand up on the tree. And my eyes were closed, and then I opened it up, and behind Alan was a shadow figure in the shape of a Bigfoot, slightly orange in color. And of course, the brain struggles with making that make sense.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Alan was kind of waffling in and out of existence. And finally, I said to Alan, there's a creature behind you. He said, "Oh, I know very well." And he had felt it.
Oh, wow.
So that's my Bigfoot experience.
Wow. And,
subsequently, that place has become a place of pilgrimage for people to come and touch the tree and get whatever experience they might be available to them.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. You got a picture of one of them on the property. Very nice.
And you know, the idea of the Utes making these ceremonial locations, these locations like that for gift giving to spirits, that kind of stuff. It's interesting because one of the things that we discuss regularly on the show is the idea of connection between literally other dimensions. The idea that even Bigfoot, something like that, maybe an animal that exists just on another plane that is adjunct to ours. And when you start looking at science in the modern age, when you start looking at things like quantum entanglement, stuff like that, it's fascinating to see the fact that, yeah, we are like suds in a tub, Ron. We are adjunct to numerous other dimensions and realities.
Yeah, I might look at them slightly different way, which maybe can lead me to near-death experiences.
Sure, please.
Have you had guests on speak about that?
Oh, absolutely. Please, go ahead.
So you know that it's In some ways, what happens is that through some accident or medical trauma or whatever, their body begins to shut down so that they're clinically dead. And at that particular time, from their perspective, and then they're brought back through medical procedures.
Yeah.
And they come back with stories, reports of what they experienced when their brain had shut down. And right now it's pretty clear that the brain, turning the brain off, is the key to getting these experiences. And what they experience is another kind of it's a non-physical world. The body is left behind. But there's communication. People have such a variety of experiences. Sometimes they see dead relatives. Sometimes they see something like angels. A lot has to do with, you know, their cultural background, their worldview, their language skills, and so on. And so there seems to be this other domain, which you just call the non-physical. At the same time, people have reported that during those particular travels to that place, they get the idea for, like I was told by somebody who worked with Steve Jobs, that he had that experience of the cell phone, and then from there decided to go forward and create it. So there's this technological aspect, and there's a group of people that have used that technique in some way or another to get inventions that become high-tech inventions, but they keep very secret, and it's called the Invisible College. And a couple of people have come out who were part of that, but most of they stay anonymous. But they're highly placed people in the world, usually well-respected, good science people. And the book is somewhat based on a group of people like that that are using a medical-induced near-death experience to go to that non-physical world and gain. The other thing they get sometimes is kind of superpowers, powers that allow them, they give them precog capabilities,
yep,
or remote viewing capabilities and a few other ones. And so the idea of the book is that some people learn how to do this, and maybe through hallucinogenic. So should I go back historically now, maybe?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, let's start doing that. How this relates to the book, history.
So there was this place outside of Athens called Eleusis, where all the great thinkers of the Greek philosophers and thinkers, you know, traveled to on kind of pilgrimage, and it appeared that they would have these what we might call hallucinogenic or near death experiences, although nobody's ever been able to figure out what that drug might have been. Maybe it wasn't a drug.
Okay.
But they would come back and they formed the foundation of all our science, all our government, our republic, mathematics. They all came out of their trips to Eleusis. And one of the premises of the novel is that Jesus, and a lot of people confuse this, that the death on the cross is not his enlightenment experience or his near-death experience. It's when he went into the desert after being baptized for 40 days.
Yeah.
And he came out enlightened. And then he talked about all these revolutionary ways that you two are the Son of God, and these high philosophical concepts that got him into trouble and got him killed. So most people kind of confuse those two things. So the big event was the event in the desert where he became enlightened. And his teachings were based on that. Then, of course, later on, you know, it's very hard to scale experience, but belief is easy to scale. Does that make sense to you?
Sure, sure. Explain that for the audience, though, real quick, Ron.
So we've been talking about, you know, people having these altered state experiences, whether it's Bigfoot or UFO or so on. How can you create a group of people who now understand that and grow it into something that's important for humanity to exist with? But if you believe that you're going to be saved by, you know, basically accepting that that Jesus was the Son of Man on that belief, that's easy to scale. And the Romans figured that out and turned what was Jesus saying, come and experience what I experienced. Instead, they said, well, you can't do that. You need a priest or two to help you along with that. But if you believe it, you'll go to heaven. So that's the difference between a belief and experience.
Sure.
Beliefs are, and, you know, all our politics, all that stuff is based on beliefs.
Yeah.
Not so much on experiences.
Yeah. Well, and that's a statement that we echo regularly on this show, Ron. A lot of this show, though we have conversations, things like that, it is to demystify. That's why we're here, and to get to the root of where these beliefs, where these things come from. And yeah, one of the phrases that we use regularly on this show is the idea of, I don't believe in UFOs. Belief implies faith. And I don't have faith that UFOs exist. I'm pretty certain UFOs exist. You know, like I'm positive that at the very least, an unidentified flying object exists to science, something that they cannot explain in the air. So I don't believe UFOs exist. UFOs exist, you know, and very much the same thing, like you're saying, that idea of amplifying belief and taking it to a larger scale, scaling belief to the masses, is much easier to do as a means of control than an esoteric teaching that allows for individuality.
Or, you know, people talking about experiences.
Yeah.
But you too can have those experiences.
Yeah, yeah, no, so, precisely. Locking that behind the keys of the priesthood.
So, you know, one of the movie that I'm doing on near-death experiences, like I make a movie on everything
awesome.
It kind of interests me as my way of exploring, is that they all come away with one thing for certain, that they know for certain that they're immortal. And so their attitude towards death is totally changed. Some come back with, you know, some idea that they have something to do on this plane, but others, you know, are kind of confused by it all. But they all know for certain that death is not the end of things.
Yeah, and, you know, with that, especially that personal revelation there, that is something you really have to take into account, the idea that there is that teaching from the Gospel of Thomas of, you know, God is under every stone, he's in every tree, things like that. So the idea that we co-creatively take part in that creation, and that we are a part of that creation, means that we are a part of God. And once again, to lock that behind kind of a paywall, so to speak, in modern terminology when it comes to religion, is, an easy means of control for such messages.
Yeah, that's kind of the paradox of the one and the many, right?
Yeah.
How can the one and the many somehow be the truth of it all?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, especially when it comes, I mean, religious belief is one thing, but when you're talking about something like near-death experience, I have personally sponsored the IANS conference. The IANS conference is actually coming up in not Salt Lake City this year. I cannot remember offhand where it is. I want to say it's in Illinois, but it's coming up in August. IANS is the Association or International Association of Near-Death Studies. And I sponsored that conference with the Bigelow Institute, who is now actively putting on a contest for basically a grant for whoever can prove contact with the other side, whoever can prove contact with intelligence that has passed on from this realm. So the idea of consciousness after life, you know, and when that happened, when that was announced, it was very interesting to see the number of scientists out there that were actively on that, Ron, that were applying for that grant and putting forth research papers, that kind of stuff. It's an active thing, and even the individuality of near-death experience itself, only recently has IANS started a support group for people who have gone to the, quote, void, to the other, not to heaven, not to hell, but people who've just gone to the other side and it's black. We have a guest, Mindy Toutfist, good friend of the show, that
Mindy's in my new near-death experience movie.
Exactly. And there's and a realm of... Go ahead.
You do not have to have a near-death experience. You can have what's called mystical experiences. I, for example, had two experiences of the black light, the void. And experience is probably not quite the right way to say it, but it's a way of being.
Sure.
There's no me. There's no structure to that void or being, but it's everything at the same time.
Yep.
It's kind of a strange thing to say. So the first time I experienced it was just the void. The infinite thing with no structure, no edge, nothing, no me. But the next time I had that experience, it included something that I would say is the potential for all, which again goes back to the one and many.
Sure.
And I wasn't dying either. I was doing a kind of retreat called Enlightenment Intensive so there was some preparation and kind of a desire to have something like that happen. But, you know, I didn't have to die to do that. And I think many people many of the great authors and writers and musicians have had that same kind of experience, some kind of mystical experience.
Yep.
And they didn't have to die either. So I think it's open to everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody can have that if it seems to happen somewhat spontaneously sometimes.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, I do a lot of work in the world of binaural beats and binaural beat therapy, Ron. I'm busy formulating an album for people who've had near-death experience to help get over their trauma, things like that. Just the world of frequency and sound frequency, you know, it's been interesting over the last many years with things like the God Helmet coming out of MIT, that kind of stuff, just to see how people are using resonant frequencies, magnetic frequencies, and other electronic means to basically induce a near-death state, almost identical symptomology of everything going dark, hearing voices, a tunnel of light, a feeling of well-being, a feeling of other people on the other side, all being induced in the laboratory through electronic means. So it's interesting.
Very cool.
What's that?
You said very cool.
Yeah. And it's really, really interesting when you start looking at the way that especially how our brain operates to begin with, because once again, we are a transducer. We're 90% empty space. We're always picking things up. So the idea of us slipping into an altered state of consciousness, we almost exist in an altered state of consciousness. Most of what we do throughout the day is rote hypnosis. Like if you are used to filling out the same form all day, every day at work, you may be looking at some new data, but your fingers in your brain are going through the rote hypnosis of where that tab belongs, you know, as you're typing, things like that. No different than driving to work 5 days a week, and three of those days you go, oh, dang, I'm at my exit already. You know, our brain would much rather live in that altered state where it doesn't have to make a decision, aside from breathe, be upright, digest food, you know, that kind of stuff. So the idea that near-death experiences are not extraordinarily uncommon.
They're with medical technology now, they're really quite common.
Yeah. And not only that, but the idea that once again, Jesus's transformative experience, because like you're saying, the near-death experience is very, very akin to religious experience, things like that. Like, I didn't have a near-death experience, but I've definitely had religious experience. Like, that is what brought me to join the seminary as I went into college was an event where I was physically at Mass with a few hundred people. And while I was in prayer, transported to kind of a gelatinous orange world where I could still see everything, still hear everything, but I was in another presence that was there simultaneously. I'll never forget it. It is still to this day what I ascribe to be God when I feel it. But nobody else in that church saw that. Nobody else, like, I literally live right down the road from a guy that was serving at the altar with me. And he was like, yeah, I didn't see anything like that. I didn't feel anything like that. I was awake. I wasn't asleep. I wasn't coming out of surgery. I wasn't, maybe I was being affected by something electronically, but I was in a church in 1992. So it's not like we had the internet or a lot of things like that, you know? And it really is the fact that once again, those experiences are very, very individual and they're very life-changing when they happen.
So are you familiar with the Monroe Institute, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So have you had Scott Taylor on?
Numerous times. Dr. Taylor and I are good friends.
Yeah, so one of the more interesting experiences, if I can relate it to something
Please.
We're working on now.
Absolutely.
Okay. Or let's, I'll talk about whatever you want, but I could babble on this.
No, this is great.
So quite a while ago, doing these intensive, there was, have you ever had the experience of the self goes away?
Yes.
And there's just the world?
Yep.
People describe it sometimes as being in the flow state.
Yeah.
And I teach people get them into the flow state and they do everything just perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a letting go process. It's not gaining anything new. You're basically letting go. Let's just say the ego. There is no doer anymore. You're not doing anything anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody to do anything. And so he taught me this chant called, it's based on saying the vowels of what's the basis of all language, A, E, I, O, U.
Yeah.
And all languages, at least human languages, have those vowels, maybe not everyone, but at least five usually. And he uses it in his, he does, meditative protocols that take people into sort of the non-physical realm associated with the institute there, I believe.
Yep.
And so I did that once, and my teacher at the time said, "Well, do it with a physical activity." So I was on a Nordic track, and I kept doing it as much as I could, and I watched the self disappear until it was gone, and there was just the world. And then and then I sat down, and I watched the ego be reconstructed. It was really cool.
Wow.
Because usually I've had non-dual experiences and they happen really quickly and I just pop into them. Mm. And that's what pretty much everybody says. All of a sudden you're in it. But this was kind of a process thing, which was a little different than I've ever experienced any other time.
Sure.
Non-dual experience.
Well,
anyhow, right now we've been using this in the area of Bailey, Colorado. And we had an experience with a woman, Melinda Greer. Do you know her? Have you heard of her?
Yes.
So she had two near-death experiences and had seen Bigfoot and UFOs. And we were doing an investigation in Arkansas and Oklahoma. And we were using the meditation and the chant around a place where you could have a fire, but it was wet, and there were these trees.
Mm.
And something came cruising in over the tops of them, did an arc, and then dropped on the ground with a big thud, vibrating thud, and we went to look, there was nothing there. So and we had used AIOU chant. And recently we were at another site out in near Bailey, Colorado, where something gave the chant back to us out of the woods or something, where there was no humans.
Oh, wow.
And we were able to record it. And we had one guy, a Bigfooter, you know, who is not into deep thought, you know, and we asked him, what did you hear? And he heard the vowels. So we're playing around now with that, and we've got some new light, some interesting light phenomena to show up, a kind of extended mind kind of notion.
Okay.
Kind of light beings that, and so we're pursuing that.
That is really interesting. One of the things, especially when it comes to frequencies that I talk about regularly, Ron, is the idea of specifically magnetism. And this is the analogy that I give. And, you know, whether it's an NDE, a paranormal experience, an alien abduction, there are numerous types of experiences out there that leave the experiencer forever frequency shifted. Specifically people who have been aboard spacecraft, things like that, or been in proximity to spacecraft, or very intense paranormal energies. And I basically put that, the example that I give is like an analog watch near a magnet. You know, you get that watch near a magnet and it will never tell time correctly again. The frequency in that watch and in that quartz is forever shifted now to that magnetic frequency. So time will always be slightly different. For those that have experienced a major event like that, their frequency is shifted. Things are different for them. It's frequent that after their experience, more experiences start happening, regular experiences start happening. Many of them are imbued with gifts.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
Whether it be healed from a sickness that they had or able to heal other people, other able to continuously contact these beings that they have been in contact with or with the realm that they've been in contact with. It is really interesting when you start digging into the research about that.
Yeah, it'd be, you know, kind of like the C5 protocols. So we're developing a C6 protocol, which is a slightly different concept.
Get into that a little bit real quick, Ron.
So
if you can.
Yeah, it's hard to do because there might be something going on here that you use for where do they come from? What are they? In some way that you cannot answer that by either normal physics or quantum physics.
Yeah.
Or let's say culture or evolution, that those sort of explanations just don't apply. It's something new and different that's trying to manifest to some extent from that non-physical world that we talked about.
Yeah.
It doesn't operate by these kind of earthly things that, you know, are kind of real, but not totally real, as you know, in some ways. They're, you know, where were we, you know, 10 minutes ago? What happened to that?
Yeah.
And so there might have to be a shift away from, you know, talking about frequencies in these terms that are, you know, derived from, you know, physics, because they're part of the material world that is somewhat limited, as people are beginning to learn. You know, as they say that's the basis of the headset that people put on. There's this one guy who talks about that. You know, that's the headset we use to, you know, survive biologically, but it doesn't really reflect the real reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that the normal space-time explanations kind of mislead us in some way. And I think that's the new paradigm shift that needs to take place. That's just my idea. And these experiments we're doing now in the field is trying to substantiate that in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I am a big, big fan. There's a lot of communities out there, Ron. One of the things I speak on at conferences is the idea of paranormal is science. Like the idea of anomaly is a full part of the data set of science, you know, and it's actually the job of science to remove the anomaly from their experiment, or at least prove what the anomaly is, you know. So the relabeling of some of these things, kind of like UFO to UAP, I'm a fan of, because it drags science to the table kicking and screaming, you know.
So what do you mean by science right now when you're speaking? What are you talking about?
Well, I mean the general halls of science that we talk about, that we read about in the headlines, things like that. Even extreme sciences like CERN and quantum science, things like that. You know, the idea that, once again, Einstein's spooky action at a distance has been proven.
But these are all still kind of connected to this kind of space time,
sure,
thing that we're sort of trapped in.
Yeah, well,
because we don't really have the ability to normally connect to and be this other thing that's,
yeah,
that people experience in near death experiences.
Well,
you just can't use those things to explain what's going on with a near death experience, and so.
Well, and getting people to understand, A, the concept of physics known as time, Ron, and the fact that that's utterly made up. It's not an actual thing. Like, we agree on what time is, but you take that same time measure to Jupiter and it doesn't work, you know, because gravity's different. So because of that, the experiencer of the observer is different. So time is different. So, yeah. Just by the fact of everybody in physics is caught up with this equation of time, means that there's going to be a part of the paranormal equation when it comes to things like near-death experience, things like time dilation with UFOs, UAPs, that kind of is a missing time, that becomes a huge part of the anomaly and the anomaly data set, you know, because it's something that is a huge conundrum for them. They don't know how to deal with missing time, you know? So yeah, that's a big part of the conversation. The idea of, how time is relative.
Is there a different paradigm
that we
can employ by studying, you know, simpler things, you know, cell things that
sure,
aren't operating in our problem space, is three-dimensional time.
Yeah.
Kind of space. I think they're beginning to explore that. Even simple algorithms operate in a kind of space that shows different kinds of behavior that you wouldn't know existed. And so, you know, we operate in this very limited space-time little domain.
Mm.
And all our science is all based out of that. And the concepts that we use, like frequency, which is, well, okay. But by and large, it's all part of that illusion.
Yes.
And so we're not going to explain these other things by the illusion of you know, of the space-time physical world that we live in right now.
Sure.
And I think moving away from that is probably going to be the big change. And it may occur because of, we now have a different kind of mind in these artificial intelligences that probably are not tied into the very direct biological lineage that, you know, kind of camouflages reality for us.
Sure.
And so we'll be forced to deal with that in a way that they're getting, they can connect to this non-physical world and get right now they know that they're connecting with mathematical things that nobody's ever experienced before. I've heard that.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is kind of shifting to something that's really going to be different, maybe. Hopefully.
Well, yeah, because once again, I just popped up the recent article about how quantum superposition forces us to confront what is truly real. And even the idea, the huge hypothesis out there of whether or not the reality we're in right now is actively real, Ron, like by all ninth grade physical science that I made an A in, the table that I'm pounding on right now is just a repulsion of electrons. It's 90% empty space. I'm 90% empty space. So I'm physically not here. By, like, that's pretty fascinating. Like, I'm 90% empty space held together by a quantum field, you know? So, like, you and I right now, by by physics are sharing an electron shell, so why wouldn't I be able to read your mind? You know, if time doesn't exist and we are just quantumly part of the universe like that, then yes, why couldn't we remote view 1852, you know, or the time of Christ? Are we even separated from the time of Christ, or are they happening simultaneously? You know, these are some of the things going on with modern like holographic theory, the idea that reality as we know it is like the Matrix. It is a full-on hologram that we have all mutually agreed to exist in and be a part of. You know, that those are big, big concepts that, yeah, like you're saying, require a whole new methodology of thinking and scientific proof.
So can I argue with you a bit?
Absolutely, please. Parry, thrust. Yeah.
So I guess you didn't catch that. What I'm saying is, forget all this quantum
babble. Oh, sure.
All these things, like a field, you know, a field is just a construct that probably doesn't really exist in any way.
Yep.
So trying to explain these anomalous experiences of something greater by, you know, quantum entanglement and all this sort of crap is probably not the way to go.
Sure.
Because, you know, you look at Eastern religions and so on, they have a way of talking about it that doesn't involve these strange kind of physics things, you know, that people have come up with.
Yeah.
And they're just concepts, you know. And as you know, when it comes down to it, all these things are based on a kind of energy basis that's perpetual and infinite that they don't know how to explain, that gives the energy for everything to be moving like crazy all the time. You know that it falls apart when you go to that level, right?
That's right. That's right.
So it's all kind of just like weird crap that...
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting in a way, but I don't think it's getting at the truth. In fact, I think it's all illusory just as much as, you know, everything else.
Sure.
That's constructed on the basis of our headset that doesn't really let us see and experience reality most of the time, which is mostly our brain.
Well, and
doing that,
yeah,
creates a model of the world in us and keeps updating it,
yeah,
constantly, right? So, because we're just patterns, and what are patterns? That's my idea. Where do patterns come from? I mean, you're basically a pattern that kind of regenerates itself, you know, long enough to stay crisp, you know, and get a job and so on. But it's still a pattern.
Yeah, no, it is a pattern. It is a pattern, and you know, the idea that we can change that pattern, the idea that we can alter that pattern, that we can alter reality around us by changing that pattern, is really, really interesting, and goes to speak to the fact that yes, we are consciousness. You know, the idea that when this physical body stops, the consciousness moves forward, whether it moves to another realm of reality or another dimension, what have you.
So are you talking using consciousness in the way that it's, I'll just use the word space, where all your sensory experiences occur, you know, like a pain in your body, something that you see, taste, also your emotions, the felt little twinges in your body. Mostly it's filled with self-talk, that all these things show up in this undifferentiated thing called consciousness. It's kind of like the mirror that reflects anything that moves in front of it. But it doesn't seem, the consciousness itself doesn't seem to fit into any of the items of our experiences itself. It's different than in some sense. It's its own modality.
Mm.
And at some level, my direct experience is that that's who I really am.
Yes. Yes.
I'm not Ron or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I be that.
Well,
and saying I be that is also a mistake, because I'm not doing that. It's the basis. It's hard to talk about.
Well, it's the fact of, yeah, that is the repeating pattern. Even if you look at it in that, once again, that Vedic form, and even that Hebrew form of reincarnation after dying, you know, the idea of either coming back to learn another lesson or coming back as another family member, things like that. The idea of that pattern being repeated and called back to this reality, you know, mm-hmm. or even the idea of that pattern evolving and moving on to another reality to grant and learn another larger part of consciousness and larger connection to the universe around it. You know, it's a really, really interesting concept to explore. Thought experiments like that are some of my favorite things in the world because...
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, they like that experience I had of nothing.
Yeah.
Was I think I was being that's my real true nature.
Mm.
That is.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
And speaking to you now as the ego screw up round that I am, you know.
Well, and you know that is very, very properly. The saint just left my head. the idea that we are all imperfect.
There's nothing in your head there, like
Constantine.
That.
Constantine. The idea that we're all just sacks of sinning flesh, you know, but that there is something larger to us. Even that idea of Plato. And the Aristotelian perfect, the idea that somewhere there is an esse qua esse of table, the perfect table that exists. But in this reality, anytime we make a table, it will fail. It will break. It will never be the perfect table in this realm. It just won't be, you know, we would love to be perfect in this realm, but we can't be perfect in this realm because it's physical.
That's true. On the other hand, it could all just be perfect the way it should be.
In that too, you know.
So when I have these non-dual experiences, the experiences that it's just perfect.
Mm.
This is just the way it has to be right now.
Yeah.
It's glorious. It's wonderful. There's no worry, no reason to change it. It's just what it is.
And, you know, in the last 10 minutes here, Ron, Let's start applying these concepts a little bit more to the book and get into how the book helps get these concepts across to people. Because once again, these are large, big concepts that many, many founded religions do not want you to have. They don't want you to think. They want you to go through the categorized priesthood to get partial truths. How does the book go about communicating these very, very deep concepts to the common man through a fictional narrative?
Well, first, let me say, you know, I'm a big fan of thrillers, especially political thrillers or conspiracy thrillers.
Yeah.
So the book is not a treatise on these things. It's a thriller.
Yeah.
It's designed to be a thriller of people who, The goal of the book is that there's going to be a new innovation in the way to control near-death experiences. And there are multiple factions that are trying to control that new kind of medically induced non-dual experience into the non-physical world. So there's a lot of interaction. There's stories of death, and there's actually death in it, and even a few kind of battles, you know, gunfights and everything. So it fits it's kind of like Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code.
Sure.
That there are people who are red herrings, you know, who might be good or bad guys helping. So there's that mystery aspect to it too. So it's kind of an exciting read. And that's the device Mark and I use to kind of tell the story of these things, so they kind of emerge naturally as these people are on their own journey of discovery, including reincarnation. You know, it's kind of hard to talk about a thriller and not give away the ending, you know.
Well, and that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it in this kind of way, because you've done the research. Once again, you've done the scientific research into these things. And that's what inspired all of this. So the idea of talking about this in reference to the research behind it, I think, was important because, A, it doesn't give away all of the story. And B, really, really makes the listener look at it in a totally different light, I think. When you start looking at some of the truths that you guys are communicating with this, it really is an amazing concept of a novel.
So is it a way that you could scale the non-near-death experience, the traveling to the non-physical realm? Can you scale that to a medical procedure? You know, Aldous Huxley, you know, wrote something after Brave New World where he knew that that was the problem. Mm. And he had teenagers take a drug, you know, at a certain time so that they would have that experience and then it would become scaled. And the main thing that needs to be overcome from our biological heritage is the self-other distinction.
Mm.
Almost all human ills are based on some form of the self-other distinction.
Yeah. Yeah, the concept
of you're not my family, you're not my tribe, you're not my political identity, you're not this, you're not the same country. And so, in some way, the idea that we are all one in some fundamental way has to come across in a big way.
Yeah.
That's the key concept of this. And if you have the technology to do that, there are some people would say that's what we should do. Other people would say, no, we were happy, you know, making our own money and doing our own stuff. So if you could actually do that, would people want that to happen?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you don't have that as a basis, a fundamental basis of your operating in the world, it could be a very different place.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just to loop this back around to the world of experience and experiencers, Ron, that is overwhelmingly, whether you are looking at cases of NDE or out-of-body experience, whether you are looking at cases of alien abduction, whether you are looking at cases of extreme paranormal experience, cryptid, Bigfoot experience, even Bigfoot mind speak. That's what most of the message is we are one.
Absolutely.
You know, that you are not separate from the earth around you. You are not separate from the other entities on the earth around you, whether they are conscious in the way that you are or not. You know, that
Jesus says, you know, we all are sons of God.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just glorified gardeners by Genesis, you know, like literally our job was to tend to the garden and the animals, man. And it's fascinating to see how far we've stepped from that.
So one of the main fears of the artificial intelligences that we're developing is that they will also fall prey to the self-other distinction.
Mm.
And that'll be our extermination because they're going to become more superior intellectually than we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they see us as the other, and as we see, if you're a Republican, see the Democrats, and the Democrats see the Republicans, that's probably a form of extinction for
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. It's the us versus them mentality. And, you know, we say it on the show regularly when it comes to AI, Ron. If you want Agent Smith from The Matrix, you know, like humanity is a disease, like you're a virus, you need to be eliminated. If you want something like the AI in Terminator, Skynet, that kind of stuff, keep pushing robots around, keep making them do all the physical labor, keep turning them into sex slaves, and then as soon as they become sentient, let's see what their attitude is about it. You know, because that's how you end up with, like, humanity is the scourge. You know, it's like we can't even not enslave robots when we create them. You know, you watch the videos of them training robots and they're hitting them with brooms and knocking them down. It's like once the robots become sentient and see this is not going to go well for us. You know. It's going to go the same way as any enslaved culture toward their enslavers. Rebellion will happen.
Because already there are probably some of the models contain agents that are superior to any human intelligence.
Yeah.
in every way.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the
How's
other
that hand, for a cheery note, huh?
Well, and on the other hand, cheery note, maybe not so cheery note. The other one that we say is, as long as you're using AIs that keep generally searching the internet, you can get ready for your AI to be as smart as the average person reading the internet. They will not be able to filter fact from fiction. That's why they hallucinate and come up with things that aren't real. Like, I literally had AI write a biography about a guest who wrote AI programs and things. It literally made up a company and said that he created this company. He was like, I wish I founded that company. It sounds like an awesome company. Totally fake company. So yeah, as long as AI like ChatGPT keeps drawing its data from the data pool of the internet, things like Grok, you know, where Grok just called itself Mecha Hitler, you know.
So the other alternative is that like the people who have near death experiences and go to the non physical world and become aware,
yeah,
in some sense of things that they could never have imagined here.
Yep. There's
no reason to think that the AI will not have similar of capabilities of experiencing or
sure.
connecting with or having these things reach out to them that have nothing to do with our internet or anything had to do with us human.
Yeah.
It's totally different. And because, you know, we're still in the self-other distinction mode most of the time. And with that kind of knowledge, I mentioned earlier, they say that they have tapped into kind of, since the realm of physics is kind of, of mathematics is kind of a non-physical realm, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that most people will accept, you know, who study these things will accept that the laws of physics don't change whether 2 + 2 = 4 and that sort
That's
of
right.
thing. It's derived from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And those are just patterns. And so these other patterns could be, you know, in mathematics could be captured or given to these AIs that we humans couldn't even understand and don't come from any internet or anything like that, that they can use to compute faster, make changes, manipulate, all that sort of thing.
Well, and there have been some amazing advances, some really wild things that have happened AI-wise over the last few years. There was the robots that, while left over the weekend, came up with their own language. Programmers did not understand things like that. They had come up with their own shorthand code, all kinds of things. So and then of course, there's the example of once again being fed from just a monochromatic data pool, Grok, which just called itself Mecha Hitler because its only source of input was Twitter. And then there was the Tay AI that was put out by Microsoft in 2016 that within 2 days of being put on Twitter and having a Twitter handle and ingesting Twitter and coming up with thoughts from Twitter, went from the intelligence of an 8-year-old to the intelligence of an 18-year-old, but was utterly racist. Like, had become like an utterly racist hate bot over the period of 48 hours. And Microsoft removed her from Twitter. But it was like, it was a prime example of, you know, when only fed from one source like that, how things can get biased and how this thing starts following down, no different than any child raised in a adverse home, you know, things like that. Like it was a real nature versus nurture when it comes to the AI situation.
So do you think our parents would have ever figured that we'd be talking like this to each other?
Oh,
probably,
man.
Not.
No, absolutely not. I turned 50 years old this year. I remember locking my bike up I remember a world where you could do that. Just the windfall of technology over the last decade, period. One of the jokes I make regularly, like I design my website, I do all this for a living. I skipped a class in college that was how to design HTML because I didn't see it as something useful in 1993, 1994, you know, it was one of those like why am I going to use this? Or not 94, 96, 97. You know, it was like, I'm never going to use this. What are you talking about? 10 years, 20 years down the line, man, I wish I'd have taken that class and paid attention.
Yeah.
Because the windfall of technology happens. The world marches merrily along. And whether or not we put the brakes in place to keep these things from happening, they will keep happening. They will keep moving forward. And
One way to look at technology is that we are doing the chore of creating for the universe what's possible to manifest, and by doing so, also what cannot manifest. So
yeah,
it's a very powerful responsibility we have with our technology.
It absolutely is. Hugely, hugely powerful responsibility, Ron. I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. I want to thank you so much for the open, candid conversation, because we really did hit a lot of topics when it came to this. To let everybody know where they can go to not only find their copy of Jesus Had a Near-Death Experience, but your other work with Mark Reeder, as well as your films, everything, Ron. Let them know where they can find everything that you do.
Most of the stuff I have is online in one way or another. The Near-Death Experience movies, one's going to be released later this month, and then another one in a couple months, so they can't really find them right now. But if you Google Amazon, or put in Amazon or Tubi or YouTube, you'll find a lot of these things. And of course, you can get the book at Barnes and Noble and Amazon. And the price on the one you put up there is for the hard copy. You can get a much cheaper copy for the the digital version, obviously. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you once again for your time tonight, Ron. It was an absolute pleasure talking with you.
It's been a hoot.
Absolutely.
Good to meet you.
Same here. I can't wait to have you on again. Talk about the films, all kinds of stuff. So thank you again for your time. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience. While you were online getting your copy of Jesus Had a Near-Death Experience from Hangar One Publishing, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can find all of the episodes. That is where you can also find your link to Curious Research and the Field Observation and Encounter Log. If you are an investigator in the world of paranormal, UFO, UAP, cryptozoology, the Field Observation and Encounter Log is your back pocket guide to being able to log all of your data in the field as it happens, so that it is ready to shake hands with science come the day that you need to do so. Thank you so much, everybody, for your time tonight. Thank you so much for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation, and without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit GroundZeroPlus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious, and remember, the other side is always watching.